Speedway Report is produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. The Texas Motor Speedway provided some good fodder for Monday night TV and radio. You shall soon see. Now, can we predict the future? Was Pocono an instant classic historic race? Time will tell, but we'll talk about that. And what is so hard about finishing a race under green? Yeah, I'm going to dust off the soapbox for that, all this, and more. Welcome to the That's Adorable edition of Speedway Report for Monday, June the 12th, 2017, from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. I'm Patrick Reynolds, and thank you for joining us for the fastest half hour in racing on RacersReunion.com, Facebook Live, and SpeedwayReport.com. From the North Myrtle Beach ZRN Studios, producer Jeff Gilder is giving us four tires and fuel for our run to the checkered flag at the top of the hour. If you're playing tonight's drinking game, it's That's Adorable are your key words. That is the quote of the weekend. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, we'll get to that in a little bit. Those of you that do know what I'm talking about, I'm glad you tuned in and joined us. Let's begin with the Speedway Report victory lane lap and tell you who won what. We're 1 week away from the official kickoff of summer. Oh, yeah. All kinds of stuff is running. Let's begin in the triangle at Pocono, Pennsylvania with the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Tour. Yesterday, taking his first career win in the Wood Brother Fords is Ryan Blaney. Saturday's Xfinity race at Pocono was won by Brad Keselowski. The Truck Series went on Friday night in Fort Worth, Texas, won by Christopher Bell. We'll pick on that finish, too, a little bit later. NASCAR's K&N Pro Series West Tour was in Colorado National Speedway. Chris Eggleston won the Napa Toyota 150. IndyCar race, like we said, in Texas on Saturday night, won by Will Power. Formula One, I love it when they're in my time zone. I actually do enjoy having them over breakfast, usually the European times, but nice to have them on a Sunday afternoon in Canada. Lewis Hamilton and the Silver Arrows found the top of the podium once again. The NHRA was in the Northeast for the annual Summer Nationals in Englishtown, New Jersey. Top Fuel was taken by Steve Torrance, Funny Car by Jack Beckman, Pro Stock by Greg Anderson, and Pro Stock Motorcycle by Jerry Savoie. The World of Outlaw Sprints got a good look at Knoxville, Iowa, as they always do in preparation for the Knoxville Nationals later this summer. A lot of guys keep their eye on that track and run those races leading up to it with their eye on the Nationals. But let's talk about our June features. Friday night's A-Main was taken by Brad Sweet, and Saturday night, you could have guessed it, Donnie Schatz won that one, as he's had some peaks and valleys this year. But when he's on, he's on. Schatz takes the checkered flag on Saturday night. ARCA raced in Pocono on Friday afternoon, where young Riley Herbst took the checkered flag. Let's go to the Midwest and the USAC Midgets. We ran Indiana Sprint Week last week, beginning last Tuesday, right after we got off the air on Monday. Where were you last week? These guys raced every night. Tuesday in Montpelier was won by Tyler Courtney. Wednesday at Gas City was won by Michael Pickens. Thursday at Putnamville, Pickens doubled up again. Friday in Bloomington, gosh, I don't have a result for that. On Saturday in Lawrenceburg, Tyler Courtney won again. Last night in Kokomo, Spencer Baston took the checkered flag. The champ, USAC Midget Week champion for 2017, Shane Golobic. Saturday night in Grandview, Pennsylvania, the small block modified feature was taken by old veteran Frank Cozy. Guy had been racing for years when I was a kid. Good to see Cozy still wheeling the small blocks. The Cars Tour was in Anderson, South Carolina. The late model stock car portion was taken by Josh Berry in a Dale Earnhardt Jr. car. Super late models were won by Bubba Pollard. Bowman Gray Stadium in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, hosted Twin 25s for the NASCAR Modifieds. Jason Myers and James Savali split those twin features. And the big race on short tracks, The Dream, was held last week at the Eldora Speedway in Rustburg, Ohio. Preliminary night one on Thursday, the Twin 25s were won by Brandon Shepard and Scott Blomquist. Friday night, they were split by Daryl Lanigan and Mason Ziegler. Saturday, when the slugfest settled, all the heats, all the B-mains, 100 laps of racing and $100,000 to win. You could have guessed this one. Scott Blomquist, another dream victory, and cashes the 100 grand check. All righty then, where should we begin complaining? I saw some good racing. I do that. But the fun stuff is picking it apart. For, Saturday night's IndyCar race at the Texas Motor Speedway, I thought was good. I love that type of racing. I know I'll freak so many people out, but this is some of the best auto racing you will see all year round, my opinion. How dangerous is it? Yeah, it's been a topic of conversation for a lot of years. IndyCar racing has lost some good racers early in life because of crashes on these type of tracks. The racing itself, in my eyes, is spectacular. However, there is an inherent danger in that as well. As we saw Saturday night, they had a NASCAR-style pileup during the IndyCar race. We saw this at the Indy 500, where they wadded up, what, 5-6 cars in one shot. You don't often see that in open-wheel racing, but more particular to the stock car version. Well, we had another one, quote-unquote, the big one in Fort Worth on Saturday night. Let's take you back through the cause and effect, and especially the finger-pointing. Tony Kanaan comes off of turn number two on the low side. James Hinchcliffe pulls up to his outside. On the outside of Hinchcliffe, down the backstretch, here comes Michaela Loschen. Tony Kanaan definitely comes up the racetrack, veers to the right, gets into Hinchcliffe, and all heck breaks loose from there. Got a lot of cars spinning, crashing, turn three and four when they got done, looked like a junkyard. Parts of carbon fiber, aluminum, suspension pieces, oil, water, you name it. We had junked race cars everywhere through turns three and four in that 600-kilometer race on Saturday night. We go to the interviews of who's what, where, who. Well, we get on the Ganassi Racing pit box, and Chip Ganassi gets interviewed. He lays the blame a little bit on Hinchcliffe for making it three wide. Let's recap what I just told you. Kanaan, running in about fourth or fifth spot, comes off of turn two on the low side, single file. Hinchcliffe pulls up to his outside. Well, we're making passes here. It's auto racing. We're supposed to get around each other. Aloshin, he's the last man in. He makes it three wide coming along the outside. This is so competitive, such a competitive style of racing. How do you blame Aloshin? You know, when Kanaan and Hinchcliffe get side by side, they slow each other down. Here's a great one, especially if Mikhail has a, you know, some momentum coming off of two. He slams into these two, whips out to the outside. Boom, he's going around the outside. As a race fan watching it on TV, as a ticket buyer, I pay to see racing. Not this follow the leader, you're racing me too hard, too early crap. I'm not into that. But Ganassi gets on, puts the blame on Hinchcliffe for making it three wide. No, Hinchcliffe made it two wide. Aloshin made it three wide. And then Hinchcliffe is fine. He wrecks his car real bad. Here's where we go. We go to the infield care center. Hinchcliffe comes out. Ganassi's words are relayed to Hinch. His quote, "That's adorable." And there you go. The "That's adorable" edition of Speedway Report tonight. That was the quote of the racing weekend to me. Hinchcliffe obviously pissed. In his words, duh. Kanaan takes a right-hand turn as we go into a left-hand corner. Going on the backstretch, Kanaan clearly went up to his right out of the groove, out of the low line. Kanaan caused the wreck. And I love Tony Kanaan. He's one of the most experienced, if not the most experienced driver in the field. Incredible talent, clean racer, hard racer. But the blame for this one lays at his feet. He's the guy that caused this crash. Case closed. Now, things happen so quick. There's a lot of reasons why spotters can't get him information that quick of a Hinch on the outside, a Loschen on the outside of him. You're three wide. This whole crash happened quicker than I just relayed the words to you. You can't always do that and just say, hey, three wide and all that. You can't do it. Well, I don't go down the route of blaming spotters for these accidents, I've always put the blame at the drivers. It is drivers' responsibility for that race car. You have spotters, you have the radios, you have all the replays you want. Drivers are getting paid the money. Drivers have the steering wheel. That's their responsibility to keep that car in a safe spot. We had such a bad crash that this resulted in, we got a red flag going on. Dale Coyne lost both of his cars in this accident. Not one, but yes, two. They both got swept up in this, destroyed. He's out of the race. They bring the field to pit road under red. Who goes to have a word with Tony Kanaan? None other than Dale Coyne. He's pissed too. He leans in the cockpit, gives him a piece of his mind. The IndyCar officials eventually come over. Hey, Dale, why don't you come on out of there, buddy? They eventually get him out of there, but they let him have a few pieces of word. He was in there long enough for TV cameras to get a close-up of Coyne talking to TK on pit road. That was the big story, the big controversy. Lots of it came out of Texas, but I thought that big crash kind of in TK's questionable move. TK, love you, buddy, but what the hell was that? Come on, brother. I don't know what to tell you about that. Alexander Rossi, as long as we're pointing fingers at Tony Kanaan, let's go with the rest of the field. Alexander Rossi, he was pissed off at Scott Dixon. Rossi had a very early wreck before the first pit stop. He was in the garage area basically before the sun had set for the race on Saturday night. Scott Dixon, well, he was pissed at Takuma Sato, the Indy 500 winner. Ran real low going through the dog leg late in the race, caught his left front in the grass on the front stretch, went up, hit Scott Dixon, and the two of them rolled into turn, not literally rolled, but slid into turn number one with a bad crash. Then we get an accident, late in the going, and here we go with a topic. I beat this to death last week at about the NASCAR race at Dover. Let's have a little Easter celebration and bring it back to life. We have a late crash. The yellow flies. We were somehow past the point of no return in IndyCar race control. The race essentially finished under caution. Why? There's no reason in the world for us to finish any race under caution anymore. I'd much rather prefer that being said. I'd much rather prefer IndyCar's policy of finishing the race at the scheduled distance as opposed to the absolute circus that NASCAR has on the other side of the fence with their finishing under green and the restart line. We talked about this at Dover last week. But finishing under green, it seems like we have too many rules with IndyCar, too many rules with NASCAR, just too much stuff going on, too many rule books, too many policies that prevent us from finishing a race under green. This isn't that hard. You either finish a race under green if you don't. I'm fine if we go the extra distance. Is the time come for that, for IndyCar to look at this? Possibly, yeah. We've always said that IndyCar is a much more traditional sport and has a lot of history to it, way beyond what NASCAR has. And they don't change a whole lot compared to NASCAR. But IndyCar does finish the race at the scheduled distance. There's no green-white checker, no overtime, what have you. I'm in favor of green-white checker. I'm in favor of finishing a race under green. I don't believe we need to limit this to two tries, three tries. If we have 10 restarts in whatever we got to get done to finish a race under green, we do it. I don't blame a sanctioning body or race control for something like that when we have all these restarts and we keep crashing cars. Again, what did I tell you a little while ago? Back on the drivers. They're the ones that are getting paid. They're the ones that are driving the cars. That falls on them. And we talked about this joke at Dover last week with the restart line. I don't know what to tell you about that. I'm glad IndyCar does not have that. I actually prefer finishing a race under caution at the scheduled distance because the rule is clear, concise, and IndyCar holds to it. NASCAR is subject to interpretation almost every single week with the restart lines and how many attempts. It seems like there is confusion each and every week. We're going to get to that in a moment. Official count, maybe this is what IndyCar was afraid of on Saturday night. 9 cars out of 22 starters were running at the finish. The race had already been a demolition derby. If they used a red flag, possibly if they ever were to employ a green-white checker overtime rule finish, maybe they'd be looking at carnage as well, and you could have the fear that, I don't know if this has ever actually happened, but the talk is, what if no cars finished a race IndyCar might have put themselves in that position. Was there a little bit of fear? There was about three laps to go. Their go, no-go sign was at four laps to go. I don't know why it was four laps to go. You could have absolutely thrown the red flag, restarted the race, and at least have a one-lap sprint. You don't need green-white as in two laps. You could throw the green-white together and won one lap for the finish of the race. At least it finishes under green. And when you throw the flags like that, even if a yellow does come out on the final lap, I could see that you're checkering it then. But still, I say throw the caution, re-rack them. We'll keep throwing the green until we checker it under a green flag condition. Now, we had this situation again. Rules up to interpretation. Fort Worth, Texas again. Same speedway. Texas Motor Speedway. Friday night in the truck race. Christopher Bell and Chase Briscoe. Caution is thrown on the final lap. We go to scoring loops. Where does the yellow come out? Where are they in the scoring loops? Where is everybody when the yellow flag flies? And this is not tied in, as I find out today, not tied into those cool LEDs on the Texas front stretch. You've seen these? The caution flies, and they go back and forth on that catch fencing with the yellow lights, and that slows guys down. There's no issue with that. Those are just for the fans. They're like a token decoration. Did you know this? I didn't know this. Those are not the official caution lights. When the caution lights come on from NASCAR, someone from the speedway throws the switch and those cool lights come on. So you can't even use those for a fan's reference of when the caution comes out and when the race is over. This, I guess, not the fact that I have a problem with Christopher Bell winning or Chase Briscoe winning. Either one is fine. But like we talked about with these green-white checker restarts, we, not we, but NASCAR particularly, have just created a Pandora's box of so many rules to try to finish a race properly. And it's got an encyclopedia of just rules and scenarios and situations of what happens. The television partners and the radio partners can't even broadcast the right information because they don't know. They're not sure. They have to ask. The people in the grandstand sure don't. The people on TV sure don't know because the television partners don't know. We've created again the second week in a row that this is relevant with the IndyCar race and the truck race, as well as last week's race at Dover, that we've got just too many rules. Let's just finish a race under green. If you don't finish it under green, go extra laps. Keep going until you finish under green. I think we got too many rules to govern this, and none of them are doing any good, causing more harm than good. Pocono Raceway yesterday, big race, big finish. Ryan Blaney, driving for the Wood Brothers, gets his first career Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series win. Driving for the Wood Brothers, one of those iconic shots is Bubba Wallace got his first Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series start. Where was Wallace? Behind the wheel of the famed Petty, 43. Blaney in the Wood Brothers, 21. Two of the most iconic cars in the history of NASCAR. I think people are jumping the gun a little bit on this race. Already being compared to the 1992 Hooters 500. Remember Richard Petty's final start, Jeff Gordon's first series start, and it was a big deal. Petty's last start was an incredible deal. Jeff Gordon's first start at the time was not. Remember, it was noteworthy. Three-time Busch Series race winner, making his first start with Hendrick Motorsports, new crew chief Ray Everham from the IROC Series. It was worth noting. It's a sidebar, but it wasn't that big of a deal. Years later, Jeff Gordon, just a name on the entry blank, became big-time Jeff Gordon. And we looked back on it, and it was a historic day. To jump the gun a little bit, you don't know what kind of career either Blaney or Wallace is going to have in the Cup Series. My money bets that both will be pretty big, but there's no guarantee of that. A lot of surefire things, sure things can't miss drivers, have not gone on to superstardom in this race. So I think we're looking for stories. We can't create stories, but I love to write stories. You got to let things happen, folks. I don't think that this is the 79 Daytona 500. I don't think it's the Hooters 500. Maybe 30 years from now, I will be wrong, but I don't think on Monday morning we can look at the Pocono race and say, wow, this was just like that. No, it's not yet. Let's see what Blaney and Bubba Wallace do in their Cup Series careers. Don't want to get out of here tonight without mentioning this. Can you believe it has been 4 years since we lost Jason Leffler from us? Yeah, I find it hard to believe, too, but Jason Leffler has been gone 4 years. And I haven't plugged these for a little bit here. Our Speedway Report stickers, little black and white, and the Speedway Report little magnet. You out there working on the race car tonight? You got the beer fridge in the garage. That's perfect for that. And you're driving, the tow truck or the pickup truck to haul the race car around. You need these on your back. Actually, you need a couple of these because your wife needs these on her car, too. Speedway Report, all you got to do is let me know what your address is. We'll give you the stickers. We'll pay for the postage. So many of you are connected to me on social media. Send me a Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+ message, what have you. Direct message me, send me a post, whatever. You all know how to get in touch with me. I'm all on social media. Just let me know. We'll get some stickers coming to you. Folks, in between our broadcasts, keep up on the world of auto racing with our website, speedwayreport.com. The Speedway Report TV replays are now posted on the site. On the top ribbon, please click on the TV button, and you can watch tonight's show as well as archived programs. We also have columns posted from Steve Zunger, Paul Bluffus, and me. Go to speedwayreport.com. Big thanks to Jeff Gilder, ZRN, and Racers Reunion for your outstanding production work this evening. You can hear more from Jeff and the Racers Reunion family Tuesday night, 7 Eastern Time, on Racing Through History, also known as the GOAT Rodeo. And don't forget, Free Pennington with Making an Impact kicks off Tuesday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Racers Reunion. Thanks to everybody in the chat rooms for tuning in. Good to be part of your family. Go see a race at a track near you. I really don't care if it's a grassroots oval, drag strip, road course, dirt pavement, whatever. They are the backbone and foundation of the auto racing world. This coming weekend, go out, celebrate Father's Day with hitting up a track in your local area. And if you tuned in late or you would like to catch a rebroadcast of Speedway Report, you can get caught up on demand at speedwayreport.com, racersreunion.com, and on the Speedway Report Facebook page. Is all of this, it's archived for you, so you can catch every single one we've ever done. Just go to our social media. I want to thank all of the military, past and present, for the freedoms we enjoy as Americans in our daily life, including the simple things like bench racing right here on a Monday night. Freedom is not free, and a veteran paid that bill for us. To all of the men and women who are defending freedom and watching Speedway Report, take care of yourselves and come home soon. A special salute to the teachers, school staff, firefighters, police officers, and paramedics in our own communities. They are quiet and modest heroes every single day. God bless and thank you. You have been watching Speedway Report from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. Produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. Don't go anywhere because BP, JB, and BS are coming right up at the top of the hour on Racing and Rocking with Draglist.com. Please like our Facebook page, Speedway Report with Patrick Reynolds, and follow me on Twitter at Speedway Pat. For Jeff Gilder, I am Patrick Reynolds. We will be back next Monday with news from NASCAR Cup in Michigan, modifieds in Thompson, Connecticut, short tracks in the NHRA in Bristol, Tennessee. Thank you for joining us on RacersReunion.com, Facebook Live, and SpeedwayReport.com. Good night, everybody.